This week on Vaticano, this year's John Paul II Award is conferred on Archbishop Julian Yakub Morat of Homs, Syria, who in a special sit-down interview shares the incredible story of his captivity by ISIS. We continue our coverage of the Jubilee events as the Rom and Sinti communities took the stage at the Vatican in a joyful celebration. We also explore how the Church is embracing the ongoing synodal journey, launched by Pope Francis and carried forward by Pope Leo XIV. Finally, we follow the Peruvian Lord of the Miracles procession as it winds through the streets of Rome towards the Vatican. For this and more, Vaticano starts now. On October the 18th, in the presence of distinguished guests, including cardinals, bishops, and ambassadors, the second edition of the John Paul II Awards Ceremony took place. This prestigious event was held in the magnificent Sala Regia of the Apostolic Palace at the Vatican. Established in 2024 by the Vatican's Foundation of John Paul II, the award reflects the Foundation's mission, pursued since 1981, to promote science, culture, charitable initiatives, and a deeper understanding of St. John Paul II's thought, legacy, and impact on the life of the Church. Archbishop Jacques Murad, Syrian Catholic Metropolitan of Homs, the winner of this year's edition, was kidnapped in 2015 by ISIS terrorists and tortured to make him renounce his faith. The Archbishop was even subjected to a staged execution, yet he endured 5 months of captivity without denying Christ.
In questo momento, il percorso per il dialogo è una necessità.
At this moment, the path to dialogue is a necessity in Syria, in our community, and therefore this award encourages all of us to remind Syrian Christians of their responsibility for dialogue. So on this occasion, I would like to thank the Catholic Church and especially the foundation of John Paul II for reminding us that the Church in Syria is in the heart of the Catholic Church. And we hope that we can live up to the responsibility of this time.
Cardinal Kurt Koch, prefect of the Dicastery for Promoting Christian Unity and chair of the award committee, underlined the reasons for which the Syrian archbishop was awarded with this prize: his witness of faith, Christian love, interreligious dialogue, and his dedication to peace and reconciliation.
It is a well-deserved award for the graduate Archbishop Jacques Murad, but it is also an award given to Syria. So let's not forget Syria, I would say.
With the award given in the hand of Archbishop Murad, the John Paul II Prize aims to strengthen hope in the hearts of the Syrian people who have endured years of suffering. That hope, especially during this holy year, should remain a guiding light on the road to peace. In Rome, the Jubilee of Hope embraces all people. Among those who crossed the Holy Door last week were the Rom and Sinti, often referred to as the Gypsy people. The event, organized by the Dicastery for Promoting Integral Human Development, brought together pilgrims from every corner of Italy and Europe. Welcoming them, Pope Leo XIV praised their strong faith, unshakable hope in God alone, and solid trust that endures despite a life often lived on society's margins.
May the peace of Christ be in your hearts, brothers and sisters of Rom, Sinti, and traveling communities, and in the hearts of the many pastoral workers who walk with you.
E instancabilmente camminano con voi.
The celebration filled the Paul VI Hall with joyful music and dance, showcasing the richness of Rom and Sinti culture through artists from across Europe.
Papa León te queremos, Papa León te adoramos, Papa León te cantamos. porque somos gitanos.
Among them was Rubino Gabriele, a violinist from the Sinti community of Bressanone, carrying forward the musical tradition of his grandfather, who, together with his family, played before St. John Paul II in 1991.
It was something completely new for me. Years ago, it was my grandfather who did this, and now I'm the one carrying on his tradition. It was deeply emotional, bringing back memories of my childhood, when I used to watch him play for the Pope. And now, 25 years later, it was my turn. Playing live for the Holy Father was an indescribable experience. And when he signed my violin and said to me, "Play," it was one of the most beautiful moments of my life.
E sentirmi dire suona per me era una cosa bellissima.
In Europe, many Rom and Sinti communities still face deep social challenges, from isolation and limited access to education to the struggles of poverty that can easily lead to crime and substance abuse. In response, the church supports initiatives that build bridges of inclusion, such as the project No Name per il Sociale in Scampia.
For me, today is an emotional moment because it means community. I'm part of the Gypsy community, even if I'm Sinti and not Roma. And this day allows us to meet face to face, to recognize that we share the same culture, and to say that we are one people. Right now, it's essential that religious communities take an interest in these issues, especially in the absence of a state that does so.
That mission bears fruitful results in medical students like Mitat Yassari, who dreams of becoming a doctor.
I want the young people of my community not to give up on their studies, but to keep going, to build a future, change our generation, and carry it forward.
The Rom and Sinti communities often live on the margins, such as in the encampment adjacent to Santa Maria della Misericordia, where Father Stefano Meloni served for around 20 years, offering not only pastoral care, but also education, friendship, and daily support. Father Stefano Meloni says it's not only about giving, it's also about learning from them the values that our modern world sometimes forgets.
Well, they certainly teach us many values that we have somewhat lost. The sense of being together, of helping one another. Perhaps those who live fragility more intensely, those who live on the margins, are the very ones who can help each other. And they do help each other. So, in that sense, they definitely teach us something. They teach us the value of family. Dragan is the second of his children. And of course, for them, roots are important. Family is important.
Per loro, insomma, è importante le radici, è importante la famiglia.
To tell you the truth, when my husband was in prison, he was the only one who truly helped us. He brought us food, gave us money. It's true, I can't deny it. He really saved us. When I was going through a hard time, he was always there for me. I'd go to him, cry, and let it all out, and he would listen. Even now, I often call just to ask if he's okay, to make sure nothing's happened. I always want to be there for him, just as he was there for my children and for me.
The Rom and Sinti face many hardships and often struggle for social inclusion. Yet through the work of Father Meloni, the church's outreach, and the attention of the Holy Father, hope continues to grow on the margins. Stay with us as we examine the church's ongoing journey of synodality. After a three-year journey, the Synod on Synodality reached its culmination with the publication of the final document in 2024. From it emerged a commitment to put into practice the recommendations made by the Assembly through processes of discernment and decision-making aimed at local churches. One year on from that milestone, the church continues its synodal journey in unity. In March of 2025, Pope Francis approved a follow-up process focused on implementing the key points of the document at the diocesan, national, and international levels. To support this, synodal teams were created to animate the territory and form it in the capacity for listening.
Pope Francis has invited us to take seriously the recommendations that emerged from the Synod Assembly, entrusting them all to local churches. This is not about applying pre-written norms, but about doing real work within local churches to discern how these recommendations can help the church grow and help us grow as a synodal church.
Among the key points presented in the final document of the Assembly was the call to promote transparency and accountability, ensuring greater attentiveness from bishops to the faithful. The document emphasized the importance of maintaining the hierarchical structure of the church while integrating it with participation, an essential element of synodality.
Synodality is, at the same time, a way of growing by involving all the baptized in the church's mission, and a path to better understand how authority is exercised, not by suppressing or eliminating it, but by living it as a true service to the unity of the whole church in view of the mission. Those who experience it discover a strengthening authority. Authority is recognized not merely because of the position one holds, but because the genuine ability to guide diversity along a shared path toward the mission.
One of the proposals discussed during the synod, and one that sparked controversy, was the suggestion to evaluate the possibility of a female diaconate. However, Pope Francis rejected the proposal for the ordination of women, explaining that the role of women in the church should be prominent, but that this does not mean, quote, clericalizing women. Following the death of Pope Francis, the work of the study groups was delayed, and they are now expected to present their reports on implementation by the end of December 2025. On May the 8th, after being elected Pope, Leo XIV delivered the following words from the Central Loggia of the Vatican.
To all of you brothers and sisters of Rome, of Italy, and of the whole world, we want to be a synodal church, a church that walks together, a church that always seeks peace, that always seeks charity, and that always strives to be close, especially to those who suffer.
In early September, Pope Leo XIV gave his first interview, during which he offered a definition of synodality. He described it as an attitude, an openness, a willingness to understand, through dialogue, an important method for living out the church's mission. He also stated that this attitude serves as an antidote to polarization. This October, members of the synodal teams gathered in Rome for a very special event. From October the 24th to the 26th, the Vatican hosted the Jubilee of Synodal Teams and Participatory Bodies.
Pope Leo is at the center. He will answer questions from the various continents. Each one will present the work they have done and ask a question to the Holy Father, who will engage in this dialogue, a dialogue that is so fundamental between those who hold responsibility and the rest of the Church. The Pope will then celebrate the Eucharist, concluding by entrusting this journey to the Lord.
The organizers received registrations from people representing all continents. The synod will continue. The first and second semesters of 2028 will be dedicated to the Continental Evaluation Assemblies and the publication of the Instrumentum Laboris for the Ecclesial Assembly, scheduled for October of 2028. Born in Syria and now leading the Archdiocese of Homs, Archbishop Julian Yakub Murat is the 2025 recipient of the John Paul II Award. His life has been marked by profound courage, enduring suffering, and steadfast faith. After being held captive by ISIS, his survival has become a powerful testimony to hope and resilience. Following the awards ceremony at the Vatican, Archbishop Murad spoke with EWTN about his intense experience, the complex challenges facing Christians in the Middle East today, and what the John Paul II Award means to him and for his community.
On a personal level, it encourages me deeply. It helps me realize how significant the work we are doing is, and that we must continue in it, in the path of dialogue, initiative, and taking responsibility in society during this time, and also regarding relations with Muslims and the importance of dialogue. This is something essential and urgent. I feel that this award encourages Syrians, and especially Syrian Christians, to recognize the importance of the Church's mission in proclaiming Christ's love to Muslims and in respecting others as others, regardless of personal attitudes.
What is the greatest challenge, Your Excellency, that you are currently facing regarding Christian-Muslim dialogue in Syria and the broader Middle East?
There's a serious challenge, not an easy one, because there is a clear position from some official Muslim authorities, and I'm referring here to the muftis, the sheikhs, and the official religious institutions who are not opening the door for meeting and dialogue with other components of society, including Christians and others. They consider, as the message we receive conveys, that the Sunnis are the true and only religion, the religion of the state, and that everyone else are merely guests. I believe that this challenge is also a school for us, a test, because it helps us, first of all, to hold firmly to our position and to continue taking initiatives. We must not stop, because we understand that the love of Christ must reach everyone.
You were held captive for 5 months by ISIS. Could you share with us a moment or a specific incident from that experience that deeply affected your spiritual outlook and your future mission after that ordeal?
I especially like to speak about the encounter that took place on the eighth day, when the governor of Raqqa came to see me in the bathroom where I was being held. When he entered, he was accompanied by four men, and one of them was masked, dressed completely in black, with only his eyes visible. As soon as I saw him, I thought to myself, this is the man who has come to cut off my head. It was just before sunset. The surprise was that as soon as he entered, he said, peace be upon you. We then spent some time in conversation, exchanging thoughts and questions. I asked him, Sheikh, why am I here as a prisoner? What wrong have I done to deserve this fate? His first answer was, in war, there are always victims. That answer stunned me. I felt crushed, a wave of despair as though my end had come, that there was no more hope of returning to life. But then he was silent for a few seconds, and afterwards he said, consider this time, these months, as a kalwa, a spiritual retreat. And as he said those words, I suddenly felt a profound inner peace unlike anything I'd ever known. From that day on, that prison, that small bathroom, became like a hermitage for me.
Your Excellency Archbishop Jacques Murad, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for the opportunity that allows us to share our message through the media. May God bless you.
After the break, we join the Lord of the Miracles procession as it makes its way to the Vatican. In October, purple fills the streets of Rome. The sound of Peruvian music and the scent of incense fill the air. This is the procession of the Lord of Miracles, brought by the Peruvian community through the streets of Rome to the Vatican. The devotion to the Señor de los Milagros, in English, the Lord of Miracles, began in Lima in 1651, when an image of the crucified Christ, painted by an Angolan slave on an adobe wall in the Pachacamilla district, miraculously survived a violent earthquake that destroyed the surrounding buildings. Over time, the image came to symbolize hope and endurance, especially among Peru's Afro-descendant and indigenous populations. Today, this devotion is celebrated throughout October in Peru and in Peruvian diaspora communities across the world, including here in Rome. In Rome, the Brotherhood of the Lord of Miracles carries this devotion forward. Its president, Wilmer Oblitas Zavaleta, explains the significance of the month of October.
October, because the events that gave rise to this devotion according to its history tell that during that month, tragedies occurred due to earthquakes in Peru, in the city of Lima, known as the City of Kings. That is the reason why this entire tradition is preserved, the day and even the month, the purple month.
In Rome, the Brotherhood of the Lord of Miracles organizes a major annual celebration, 3 days of prayer in various churches across the city, culminating in a solemn procession through the streets and ending in St. Peter's Square. On the platform is the image of Christ, the Cristo Moreno, adorned and carried on the shoulders of men known as cargadores.
For me, it means something truly great, because the Lord of Miracles belongs to everyone. Yet for each of us, it's something deeply moving that we always carry in our hearts.
At the front walk the sahumadoras, women who carry thuribles of incense, walking backwards and facing the image of the Lord of Miracles. Their backward steps are a gesture of reverence, while the rising smoke symbolizes the purification of the path for the procession.
We are pioneers because we always go before the Lord, offering our incense in gratitude for the faith and hope that He gives us.
For the Peruvian community in Rome and beyond, this procession is a reaffirmation of identity, an expression of Peruvian faith.
We have the privilege to be here. We are 67 pilgrims of the Nazarenes, brothers and sisters from the Church San Marcos of Evangelists. We are here to celebrate the honor of the Lord of the Miracles, especially because our Pope Leon XIV is a very excellent and nice devotee of the Lord of the Miracles. From Chiclayo.
The procession winds through Rome's historic streets to its final destination, St. Peter's Square.
Estendo il mio saluto agli altri pellegrini presenti, in particolare alla Hermandad del Señor de los Milagros.
There is the Holy Father, the first Pope with Peruvian citizenship, approaches to bless the image of the Cristo Moreno and the thousands of pilgrims who have come from Lima, from Chiclayo, and from every corner of the diaspora. The joy of Peru becomes the joy of the Universal Church. Thank you.